Blog Talk Radio.
How's everyone else doing tonight? Chris, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. I'm doing great. How are y'all doing?
Great. You want to introduce the rest of your friends?
Yes. We got two groups with us, Ghost Quest Paranormal and Paranormal Society of New Orleans. You got the co-founder, Ken Wiggins. He's here. You there, Ken? Okay. You got Ryan. Ryan, you there?
I'm here.
All right. And Ghost Quest Paranormal, you got Jeremy.
How you doing? All
right. Not Jerome, hey. Like everybody sees it online.
Yeah, Jeremy. There's no O in there.
So, is Ken on here yet? I guess not.
Yeah. So, just out of curiosity, how did you guys meet each other?
Wait, what's that? Say that again. I'm sorry.
How did you guys meet each other?
Talking about Jeremy and us? I'll let Jeremy tell that story.
Yeah.
Well, I was with another group, and I started my own group called Ghost Quest Paranormal, and me and Chris just kind of started talking on Facebook, and we've become really good friends, and we decided to work together on different things, and our relationship just grew, and now we have a bright future of working together.
That's in a nutshell.
So, how did you guys get interested in the paranormal?
I'll let Jeremy take that one first, too. Yeah.
Well, okay. For me, I was raised strict Baptist, you know, and, you know, having a faith in God, you know, you're naturally curious about everything else. So, I've always kind of had, you know, an interest in it. And then as I got older, I got an opportunity to go on a ghost hunt, and I was hooked ever since then. I mean, it's just become a passion, and I just couldn't let it go. It's been part of my life since that moment. So I started doing paranormal investigations at people's houses and stuff and learning, reading whatever I possibly could about the paranormal to educate myself as much as possible because I believe knowledge is power. And I started my own team, and I've had some great things happen so far in my life doing this. I love helping people. There's no other passion that or no other thing that I would rather do than be able to help people that need it.
Okay. Now, how long have you guys been working together for?
You take that, Chris.
Well, we haven't been working together that long. We've met only within the last couple months that we started all this. I got started with paranormal investigating in general is that, let's see, I was an atheist all my life up till I was 26. I'm about to be 30 now. I kind of had that change in chapter in life where I let God in and then started asking all these questions, and what about this and what about that, and never had a paranormal experience or anything like that. And I gave a lot of my time to do volunteer work, and I had two jobs, and I kind of found a really good job to where I could just do that, and then I found a lot of time on my hands. So I ran into an old buddy that I went to high school with at a convention, Comic-Con, Wizard World Convention, and he was with a team, and I joined that team, and I was just hooked from that point on. I've been with two previous teams, didn't work out well with them, and then I started my own team, and that's kind of how I met Jeremy. You know, we were always kind of the oddballs out, you know, so I think that's kind of how we were drawn together. So started talking, and I had a team with, you know, Ken Wiggins. He's my co-founder. Should be calling any second now. We started our team. That was before I met Jeremy. And then Jeremy had his team, and you know what? We're just like, look, you know, we got a good thing going over here with Paranormal Society in New Orleans. It's going great. You got a good thing going with you. Let's just show people that two teams can work together and, you know, knock out some historical sites and some residentials here in New Orleans and South Louisiana all around the state. So that's kind of how we've approached the whole thing, trying to lead by example, so to speak.
Okay.
Hey, what's up, guys? This is Ken.
There he is.
Hello, Ken.
How you guys doing tonight?
You're always late.
Great. So do you guys actually find that there's a difference between working, say, in a normal town and working in a tourist town like New Orleans where a lot of people come into it in terms of investigations?
You know, I think this whole state's haunted. Because
it is.
I think something's wrong with this whole state. I don't know what it is, but I really think – You know, the thing about New Orleans is you take any place. I mean, it's the port, it's the history, it's the big city, it's the huge population, you know, and the different types of cultures. I think that the cultures of New Orleans is really what separates it from everything else because, you know, you had your Spanish and you had your French that settled here with the African-American slaves, and then that kind of formed that different culture. And then you had all kind of different other people. But New Orleans is extremely, extremely haunted. I would be comfortable saying that it's the most haunted place in America, haunted city in America. And that's a good, valid argument. But my experience going out investigations, I've had way more experience in evidence gathering outside of New Orleans than I have inside New Orleans. So I just think New Orleans is just built up, you know. But we have that. We have a lot of history here, and I think a lot of history and a lot of death. And a lot of, you know, that all adds to paranormal activity.
Now, in saying that, have you guys ever had a case where the history plays into your paranormal activity?
I do.
Yeah. I can't take that one.
I live in the heart of Cajun country. I'm roughly about an hour, 15 minutes west of New Orleans, and in the middle of the swamps. We have a lot of what I believe to be residual energies. Where I live at one time, it must have been many, many years ago because the trees are 50, 60 feet tall. It was all cane fields, and if you actually go into the woods, they still have the rows and stuff. And I many times I've sat on my porch, and across the street from my house is a huge cow field, and I've seen these three shadow people, and it looks like they were kind of slightly bent over swinging something, like, say, like a golf club almost. And I watched it, and I told my wife, I'm like, hey, Sadie, you see this? And she looked, she's like, no, I don't see nothing. And when I said that, it's like they stopped, they stood up, they faced me, and when I turned and they put my cigarette ashes and looked back, they were gone. I've seen that on several occasions. And as well as in my backyard, I do see shadow people running across the back of my yard. And I'm not the only person. Many other people have seen this as well. So I think it's just residual energy from, say, back in the slavery days. You know, there was a lot of that around these parts. There's a lot of plantations, a lot of sugarcane where I'm at. In fact, it's all sugarcane and swamp.
Yeah. Now,
I just find it exciting.
So how many of you guys live in the actual city of New Orleans?
I live, me and Ryan live right here on the West Bank of New Orleans. We're probably about 10 minutes from the French Quarter. So different sides. You got the river splits us in half. So you got the actual city of New Orleans, and then you have little suburbs out. Like, it's kind of crazy. I think Amy, you know, lives in Algiers, I think you said. And that's on the other side of the river, too. So, you know, and it's considered New Orleans, but, like, I'm technically in Tarrytown. And then you got Metairie on the other side of the river and Kenner. It's just split up into all these different suburbs, you know. That's why we like to use the term metro, New Orleans metro areas.
And I'm actually 50 miles north of New Orleans. I live in a town called Ponchatoula, which where the Indians settled on the north shore of the lake. I mean, Ponchatoula actually stands for hanging hair. So it itself has a lot of haunted history to it with, you know, the Indian Wars back in the early days. And, you know, Indians were very spiritual people. So, you know, our little town itself has its own little haunted stories or so forth.
Yeah. Amy, did you have any other questions to give?
Yes. You said that you only got together recently. Did any of these investigate prior to Hurricane Katrina?
No, not me. I got into it after Hurricane Katrina.
Yeah, same here. I got into it after Hurricane Katrina.
Same here.
Yeah, I didn't even live down here before Hurricane Katrina, so.
Or if you didn't investigate prior, did you have any experiences prior and after that you would be able to say there is a difference in the atmosphere around here before and after? Is there anything you can add to that?
I don't find really there's a difference from before and after Katrina. I've played around with ghost hunting, say, for a long time. I have other things that I've dealt with for many years, but I don't find anything different, really. The same old, everywhere you go, everywhere you turn, it seems like something's right there with you. And at night, it only gets worse. You know something's following you. Louisiana is the creepiest state in the Union. Or none.
Really?
Well, I think in general, if you take a place that's like New Orleans that was already considered haunted as it was before, you know, pre-Katrina, and you take so much devastation and you add to it, it's not going to make it any better. It's only going to make it worse. You know, and
well,
this is just my opinion. So, I mean,
find it
I think if, you know, something that came through here, the travesty of Hurricane Katrina, I think it just only added to the paranormal activity. You know, there's not many people you will find that investigated pre-Katrina that live around New Orleans. I mean, I'll ask. You know, I'll try and find out for you guys, but they're hard to find.
Yeah.
Most of the groups formed right after Katrina. So it's really hard to say, especially 7 years difference, 8 years difference. If there was really, you know, but my opinion, I think it would have caused a rise in paranormal activity. So has it gone so much to where people have noticed? I don't think so. I really don't. Yeah.
Okay.
What I was going to say was, have you guys ever had an experience like voodoo or hoodoo in any of your cases?
That would probably be my field. I've messed around in the Wicca religion. I think I began it about 20 years ago. I worked my way up actually to high priest in the Wicca religion. Haven't really messed with it much in the last, say, 8 to 10 years. But, yeah, I was really into it, and I lived by it. And I still base a lot of my beliefs off of the Wicca religion, but I don't just solely believe in the Wicca religion. I do incorporate my Catholic into my Wicca religion. I ultimately believe in God. There is the same being that everybody else believes in. But, you know, I do believe in God and goddesses, you know, it's like their helpers and stuff like that.
Okay. Yeah, I just wasn't sure if you investigated a place where that was, like, involved.
You know, I'll tell you what, anything that practices in negativity and lives in a negative lifestyle, and you add paranormal activity to that, it's going to make it rise. Whether it's, you know, a simple Catholic home that, you know, has, you know, alcoholism or depression or just people with violence and it's just a bad home. And then where it's where you're bringing in, you know, voodoo and you do a ritual and stuff, if you invite that stuff in, it's going to rise it up, you know. So I think it's, you know, I like to keep the simple is better type of belief, you know, because walk into all kinds of situations with people with all kinds of beliefs, and you know, we just kind of have to adapt to that and understand it. And the method that we use, I mean, it seems to work so far. You know, we're bringing positive energy in and forcing the negative energy out. You know, it seems to work no matter what belief anybody has. You know, positive.
Can you explain your full method? Your complete method in an investigation?
Like what we do from start to finish?
Mm-hmm.
What we do is we get there and we, you know, establish where we're at, what we're doing. We get together. First thing that needs to go up is the DVR cams. With Ryan, he's on the line. He's our tech manager. He can tell you a lot about our equipment. What we do is once we get the DVR cams up, which that's the hardest, that's the most time consuming. Okay, you got to get those things up because you're dealing with all the wires. You got to make sure the cameras are in position. You got to find places to put the cameras. It's just, you know, very tedious work. So once we get that out the way, then we can meet back up outside and come up with a game plan of whether we're going to go in there and do a spirit box session or EVP session. If there's already activity picking up, I mean, we'll have activity while we're setting up. So, you know, when we see activity, we investigate it. So investigate the claims, you know, talk to the owners about it. Try and get the owners of the house involved in it. That's more powerful. Once we gathered up our evidence and the night's going through, we end it with a cleansing. And Jeremy can tell you how he cleanses. And I don't know if Ken does his cleansing differently, but I think it's all the same. They can explain that to you.
Well, my approach to cleansing a house is, so far, me and Chris, and we've done two homes so far, and I say we're two for two on cleansing the house. They haven't had no signs of paranormal activity since we left. But my approach is simple. I mean, you have to believe solely in what you're doing. It's just like a crucifix, for example. If you don't believe in the religion that's behind that crucifix, it's just an object, nothing more. what makes it believable is the belief that you have in God is what makes a crucifix, so to speak. So whenever I go into a house and I get ready to do a cleansing, I tell the people, look, you have to truly believe in what we're doing here. If you don't believe, if you're going to have negative thoughts, leave the house, because whenever you're believing in what you're doing, what are you doing? You're projecting positive energy in the air, and positive energy will drive out negative energy. So what I'll do is I'll gather my thoughts, you know, say a little prayer to myself. I'll sage the house, go room for room. I'll sage the house. And then what I find that is very effective is after you do the saging in the house, we use what we call dragon's blood. I'm sure y'all guys heard of it. After we sage the house, we'll go through the house using dragon's blood, you know, to keep to protect the family, to keep the spirits out. And I have to tell you, I mean, I put total 100% belief in what I do when I do this. I know it's going to work. And as I'm going through the house, you know, you got when you first start, you got this heavy feeling on your chest. But as you're going through the house, cleansing the house, it just feels like it gets lighter and lighter and lighter. And by the time I'm done, I mean, you can just literally feel it in the air. It just feels so much cleaner, so much cooler. It doesn't have that heavy feeling to it. And, you know, for me personally, I got into this because of my passion to help people. Because I know what it's like when you think you're dealing with something and you don't want to tell nobody because you don't want people to think you're crazy. So that's why people contact us. We don't judge people. We go in. We go by what they tell us. We go and do our investigations. And the number one thing that I try to tell people all the time, this is not like you see on TV, where you're going to go into a house on your first try and do warrior ghost busting or whatever you want to call it, and it's done with. Sometimes it takes more than one try to get rid of these things. But in my opinion, the number one thing is you have to find out what kind of haunting you are dealing with. I've had a couple of cases where I've dealt with demonic figures, and they're far more harder to get rid of than just, you know, a spirit. But just take belief in what you're doing, and you're going to come out on a better end.
Hmm. Okay. So what place would you guys recommend in New Orleans as being your favorite place to investigate?
All right. Look, I mean, that's a good one. You got some good questions, Chris. Well, it comes down good. I mean, that's just like saying which city you would like to visit. You know, I mean, it's just saying like, you know, it's just, I don't know, man. It's just,
let me check.
You know what
I tell you
what? Ghost Adventures came down here and investigated Mary Medlin's house, the Voodoo Queen of New Orleans.
Mary Medlin.
And yeah, and that they had the craziest experiences there that they talked about for months afterwards. You know, I think Nick had got chased out of a room by a spirit, and like books were flying off shelves, and you know the attic, there was things cursing out of the attic. You know, I would like to investigate that place. That would be probably one. You know, we have we're in talks right now with historical sites, huh?
Where are y'all talking about?
Which place?
Hi.
Hi.
The Voodoo Queen was Marie Laveau.
Well, you see, that's what I was fixing to say. For me, Marie Laveau would be the ultimate grand prize for me to be able to investigate that in the Jackson Hotel on Bourbon Street. I would love to.
Now, Marie's house is on St. Anne Street, if I remember correctly. Hi, Jeremy. How are you? It's good to hear from
you. How you doing?
All right. You holding?
I'm holding.
Been hearing some good things
Mary
about
Midland's
you.
Mary Midland's actually the Voodoo Queen of today, kind of. That's how she's looked at.
Are you talking about Bloody Mary?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, she's been around for a while.
Yeah.
I'd personally like to investigate a St. Solomon that's been closed down with some type of mental hospital, tuberculosis.
Well, you would
hospital.
Be looking more, if that's what you're going into, I would see about looking in a southeast Louisiana Hospital over in Mandeville on the North Shore. It's recently been closed. You know, and with
they
that.
They also had that place in Jackson over there. It was an old mental hospital. It was actually one of the first women's mental hospitals. It's been shut down for years. Now, I've actually went and, you know, walked into it and checked it out. I've never done a paranormal investigation there. But, I mean, you go down into the basement of this thing, and they still got all the, like, shackles that they used to use way back in the day to hold them and all kinds of stuff. Man, it's just a really freaky feeling.
Each place is going to be different. You know, you're looking at different energies coming from different paths and different lives. You know, and when you're talking about paranormal, it's not always this horny, leveled-looking guy, you know, with a tail. A lot of times it's grandmother coming to visit just to make sure you're okay. It's paranormal is not always cruel and evil. That's what we in New Orleans that have been investigating for years and years, that's what we understand. There's two different sides.
Okay. And what's your name, ma'am?
My name is Gail. My name is Gail Fontenot. I'm from New Orleans. I'm from the North Shore, actually.
Okay.
Oh, Gail, I didn't even recognize that was your voice. Yes, this is Gail.
I'm Jeremy's medium.
Right.
Oh, I was like, who is
this? Hi, guys.
She didn't know who it was.
Surprise.
She was with me whenever I investigated the property that the book is about called Out of the Darkness. She was the medium that was with me that night.
That's a good thing to talk about. Actually, Chris has a couple of the EVPs from that place.
Yeah, they're great.
Yeah.
That's actually, they're speaking over my voice.
Yes.
Now, I listed the title on the show as what they were listed when you gave it to me. What which EVP, what was it?
It was labeled Joy. I think I can use Joy 002 and Joy 005. That's how they're labeled.
Okay.
The one that says Boss, that's the one
that's the granddaddy of them all.
That's the guy. Yeah, that was very vulgar of him. Do you have the EVP? Because I don't know if you understand what happened just before we captured the EVP.
Yeah. I could play. I'm just downloading the Joy 005 because I don't know why. For some reason, it didn't get uploaded. But I'm uploading it now. But I have 002 uploaded. We'll listen to that.
Would you like for me to tell the listeners a little bit about the house and the story before we go into the EVP?
Please, Jeremy.
The house is located in Mount Hermon, Louisiana. The owner, which is Joy Stinson, she actually wrote a book about all this that will actually be out within the next 2 weeks. She went to the Myrtles Plantation in 2010. On a fun girls' night out, her and a couple of her coworkers went out. Well, when she come home, she seen some pictures that she took, and she got fascinated with this orb. I mean, it really just took over her. She was fascinated by it. She was constantly looking at it. In my opinion, she opened up a door. I mean, when you become, you know, fascinated with something like that, you're opening up a door for something to come through. And unfortunately, you can't control what comes through that door. So shortly after, her and her three daughters was being terrorized by this spirit that they call the Boss. Well, I was with another paranormal group at the time. We got a phone call from her. She sounded really desperate, so we went over there the very next day. And I will never forget the first time I seen Joy. Whenever I walked in the door and I laid eyes on her, you're looking at this frail,
bless her heart.
100-pound, you're looking at this frail 100-pound woman. And you could literally tell she had been up for days. I mean, she was, like, spaced out. I mean, you could just tell that she, her concept of reality, she was questioning her own sanity. And so, you know, I talked with her for a few minutes, and then I actually encountered my first demonic full-body apparition in this house, and it's one of the things that I'll never forget. I grabbed the K2 meter, and I'm walking through the hallway of the house, And the master bedroom is to the right, and straight across the hallway to the left is a bathroom. Well, I passed the master bedroom, and I felt a real uncomfortable feeling. And so I turned to go into the bathroom, and there's a mirror that goes all the way across the wall. She has one of those big double sinks on one wall, and there's a mirror that covers all the way to the wall. Well, I got the K2 meter in my hand, and I'm walking, and all of a sudden my K2 meter spikes all the way to red. All the way to red holds for about 3 seconds, and then boom, it goes back to nothing. So I happen to look up, and I see this man, if that's what you want to call it. He's standing in the doorway of the master bedroom, and the man's about 6'5" to 7 foot tall. He's real skinny. His head was shaped like an egg. I'll never forget it as long as I live. And his face was really distorted. And the one thing that really made him look odd was his arms were extremely long, and his fingers were twice the size of a normal person's fingers. It come past his kneecaps when he was standing there. And I seen this thing, and I was terrified, not only because of what I was seeing. I knew at that point that we weren't just dealing with the spirit. We were dealing with something far worse. We were dealing with something that was demonic. And I remember just running out of there, and my partner at the time and Joy was standing in the kitchen talking, and I went in there and I described to them what I had just saw. And my partner's jaw literally hit the ground because Joy was just explaining to him what this guy or this thing looks like. So we decided we was going to come back the next night, well, that following weekend, and do a full-blown investigation. Well, the funny thing was, when we got ready to leave, we walked outside. There's not a cloud in the sky. And this, look, you can't make this stuff up. There was a cloud right on top of our house. I mean, a solid black cloud. And the wind was literally blowing 60 mile an hour plus. I remember the patio furniture being blown off the patio. And we couldn't even hear ourselves talk. Well, we hurried up and we got out of there. And when we pulled out the driveway, the vehicle we were in had power locks. And I can remember the power lock kept clicking up and down, up and down, up and down, all the way until we got halfway out of Mount Hermon. It stopped. And look, I did not want to go back to that house. I told my partner that I was terrified. I did not want to go back to that house, but I knew inside of me that I had to. I knew I had to help them little girls. That's the one thing.
That's right. That's your calling. About.
Right. I just knew I had to help them. So we went back, and we done a full-blown investigation, and we caught a couple of EVPs that night. Nothing spectacular happened. Well, she ended up selling the house. She had to even post that it was a haunted location whenever she sold the house. Well, the night that they actually got all the furniture out of the house, she called me. This time I had formed Ghost Quest Paranormal, and I got Gail to come with me. And we're walking through the house. We had a digital recorder going the whole night. We never turned it off. And what you're about to hear is some of the actual EVPs that we captured that night.
Okay. And I'm going to play the first
okay,
one
can
of
I
the conversation. Yep.
Hi.
Hi.
This is Gail again. As we were getting ready for that EVP, if you'll let me just add a little bit to what Jeremy was saying.
Okay.
As he said, before we start, we do a prayer. I do a thing to protect everybody. Right after we had finished this, we were in the room. I turned to Jeremy. I said, Jeremy, the hair on my neck is standing up. It's all there on the film. And that's when we catch this EVP.
Hmm. Wow.
We did not hear it at the time. Do you guys have it? Is it queued up?
Yeah, I have it. Just want to make sure you guys were ready. All right. Now, the first one I'm going to play was the one with the conversation.
Sure.
Okay. Now, what exactly was that?
That was the spirit that we called the boss. I don't know if I can say it
was
on the radio.
Was that the growl?
He says, mother effers, leave me. That's actually what
okay.
He says.
All right. That one I have in Joy 05, which is this one right here.
Yeah.
Let's see. The boss.
That EVP was captured after we left Joy's room, which was where the first EVP was captured. We're actually walking down the hallway into one of the children's bedrooms. We call it the clown room because they got balloons and stuff painted all on the wall. But as we're walking down the hallway, that EVP there was actually captured. And, I mean, we never even noticed it. I mean, because if you
no.
– I'll actually have the actual video. I had the video to go along with the audio, and it's on my Facebook page. If any of your viewers want to, you know, see the actual video that goes along with that, you can find me at Ghost Quest, one word, space para, and I'll have it up after the show.
Okay. Yeah, that'd be great. Yeah. Now, what did you – in this case, there was a demonic entity?
Yes.
Yes, sir. It was a demonic entity.
That's what I do.
She's actually had an exorcism done on her. I mean, this haunting literally went on for 2 years. I mean, she had more than one spirit there, but the boss is the dominant one. You could actually walk into her house, and I have pictures of this where you can go and just take pictures, and you will see faces in the wall. And I know what people are going to say, well, that's just matrixing. That's wrong, because you can go back to that same wall 5 minutes later and take a picture, and there will be a totally different face in that wall.
Wow.
Wow.
The property itself does have a lot of locked energies on it. My thought was that the boss, as Jeremy calls him, was overpowering what I saw as a lot of children's souls that were locked onto the property. Therefore, the entity actually gravitated to Joy's children, which as any mother knows, if something's hurting your child, honey, you're going to, you know, it's teeth and nails. So this woman has battled something that so many of us can't even comprehend, and yet to come out of it, you know, stronger for it, that she really went through a lot. But, yeah, that place is, as I said, that place, when I say I don't like something, I don't like it because it's scary, you know, and all in jest. This stuff is real. People need to understand that. If good is real, why not evil being real also?
Now, is this lady completely cured of this haunting?
Yes, as of lately. Actually, the last investigation that we went on with Gail, we actually kind of sealed the portal, so to speak. Come to find out, now this is, I don't know if this is what caused the haunting or not, but about 7 years ago, she actually went to Honduras on a mission trip, and she had this guy that took her across the town on a tour of the town. Well, she entered this building. She said there were six other guys, and they all had their way with her, and they would mark, you know, symbols of blood on her as they were, you know, having their way with her. And they told her later they were allowing demons into her body. Now, when she come home, the hauntings did not start until she went to the Myrtles plantation. I have yet to figure out if the haunting has to do with the Honduras experience or if it has to do with the Myrtles plantation. I've even come to think that it could be a generational haunting. This is one of those cases that has haunted me for the past 2 years, trying to find answers for myself, just trying to find answers for her.
Okay. Amy, did you want to add anything on to that? You've been quiet lately.
I was wondering, that you said that took place north of Louisiana?
I'm sorry?
I mean, New Orleans, sorry. That took place about an hour away from New Orleans?
No, this place, Mount Hermon, is if you go north from New Orleans on Interstate 55, it's right past the town.
90 minutes.
Yeah, it's about an hour's drive from where I live.
Yeah.
So about an hour and a half drive from New Orleans.
It's
right in between Franklinton and Kentwood.
It's an old wooded forested area. It's got a lot of energy to the whole area.
Yeah.
Yeah, later I have actually investigated another home in Mount Hermon about a month ago, and they were dealing with something similar, but I don't think that what they were dealing with was truly demonic. I just think that they had a negative spirit there.
And you know, Jeremy, also, so many people are haunted in their brains, you know, and this is so hard for them to realize they're not caught up in their mind, and it's really there. They're not making it up. And that's where Jeremy, that's where Ghost Quest, that's where New Orleans Paranormal, these kind of groups come in. We want people to understand we know what they're going through, and we are there to help.
That's right. That's our number one goal.
You know,
speaking of that, what is the difference that you can notice in the difference between just a plain negative spirit and a demonic entity?
Negative spirit is, you know, it causes chaos in the home where they feed off of negative energy, which would cause people to fight. You know, if you live in a house where a family or a couple's constantly arguing and there's a lot of negativity in the house, a negative spirit will be attracted to that, and he will feed off of that. And usually he will pick one person in the family, and usually it's the female, and he will torment her, so to speak. Now, a demonic spirit, on the other hand, they were never living, okay? They were never once living human beings, which when you're dealing with a spirit, they were once living human beings. Now, a demonic figure, on the other hand, he doesn't have to play by the same rules as the universe as other spirits. I do believe that negative spirits and spirits in general are bound by certain rules. I know that's kind of hard to explain or understand, but it's just what I've come to believe after some of my investigations. Now, when you're dealing with a demonic force can physically attack you, just like that this same house enjoys. Whenever I was telling you the K2 meter was spiking and I seen the guy standing behind me, well, the reason the K2 meter spiked was, and I didn't realize this until I got home, was I got scratched on the back, and it was three scratches, which is a sign of Trinity, which in itself is demonic. Another trademark of demonic spirits is scratching in the walls, hearing like somebody's dragging their body across the floor. That's a sign of demonic spirits. So you got to think about this. This thing's so powerful to where 3 hours after the initial encounter with this spirit took place, I still had three scratches on my back when I got home and took my shirt off. I didn't even realize at the time because I was in that investigator mode.
You were in the zone.
Right.
Yeah. No, did you guys experience demonic oppression?
I'm sorry?
Did you guys experience any kind of like spiritual oppression after that case?
Well, I wouldn't say that I did, but I can tell you this. The image that I see and the man in general, the one thing that haunts me is, why did he choose me to show himself to? And that is something I live with every day, and it's constantly on my mind. Why did he choose to reveal himself to me? Was it that he felt threatened by me, or did he feel that I was weak and he could attack me? Because I did get physically attacked. And I still have dreams to this day. But as far as having, you know, something follow me home, look, like I said, my belief is strong in what I do as far as cleansing the houses. I do not go, whenever I go on an investigation, I try to be 10 foot tall and bulletproof to where nothing is going to want to mess with me or follow me home. And I've also learned through my years of paranormal investigating that paranormal investigating in your normal life has to be two different lives. In other words, you got to kind of look at it as a job. When you leave your job, you don't think about your job no more until you have something else to do with that job, right? So that keeps these things out of my mind, so to speak, and it keeps them from being able to attach themselves from me. I have learned that whenever I leave this place, that's it, I'm done. It's out of my mind until I go over the evidence. I go over the evidence. After that, it's out of my mind again until the next one. That's the approach that I take, and so far it's worked for me.
What was that?
Yeah. I don't know, but it sounded like it was a C cord from an organ, an old Hammond organ?
Man, that was something paranormal.
Like
talk
about on cue, huh?
Where did that come from?
Chris, was
kind of like a train.
Chris, are you over there playing the organ?
I'm not.
I'm
no.
playing my organ, but I got y'all on mute, okay?
You know, and Jeremy, I'm going to jump in one more time. Jeremy has what it takes to do it. I've just been doing it a whole lot longer. And with that, when Jeremy senses a demon, he has a different way. Some of us are just born this way. If I can walk into a place, and it depends on if my stomach, they laugh at me because I say my stomach's flipping because I physically feel, you know, the different levels of energy, the different spirits, things like that. There's so many people out there that have so many gifts. You know, Jeremy does. I was given one. And if we don't use this to turn around and help people, then why were we given it? Now I'm hearing beep beep.
Oh, I had to ask this question earlier before you came on, Gail. You said you were investigating for a long time. Were you doing that before Hurricane Katrina?
Yes, absolutely. I was in New Orleans when New Orleans was still, say, mid-70s, you know, late-70s,
okay.
early-80s. I was
now,
born
did you notice a difference in before and after Katrina?
Sure, absolutely, absolutely.
Are they positive or are they negative?
Both, you know, both. Mainly, it's so sad. I'm sorry I didn't get your name. I apologize.
My name is Amy.
Amy, nice to meet you. New Orleans was, I mean, you're looking at 300 years of history before Katrina. So just growing up there, you learn to pick up on these things. And the difference now is the heavy, the sadness, and a lot of it is the not knowing. You have these spirits that got washed away. You know, you're talking 1 minute they're breathing, the next minute they're gone, and they don't know what happened. They're still wondering where to go and what to do and who to see. And it's tragic, you know, it's so tragic. If we could just all get together and maybe take a neighborhood at a time and go through and try to help these spirits get to where they need to be, it would really seem like a resurgence of positive energy coming into New Orleans again. I think we need that.
Yeah, do you think it affects the living, like you're saying, you need a positive energy?
Absolutely.
Coming back. Do you think any one part of the city is more affected than the other?
Of course, well, that goes with the numbers. You know, that honestly goes with the numbers because I'm sure that the lower ninth where people actually lived is going to have a whole lot more energy than the warehouse district, not the renovated part, but you know what I'm saying. Depending on the amount of people and the energy in any one spot, that's going to determine what kind of energy you're going to pull out of there. No, I've been doing this for a long time. I was fortunate enough to grow up in it and be able to help people. And, again, I wound up with Jeremy. I call him and Tammy. They're my stepchildren, and they're out there for the right reasons. But, you know, this isn't anything that's not new. I mean, people, when they talk about, you know, oh, it's getting dark, you know, whatever's there in the night is also there in the light. It's always around us.
That's very true, Gail. Mm-hmm. That's very true.
Yeah. Now, have any of you guys investigated the St. Louis Cemetery number 2?
Grew up in that place.
Chris and
I have a story about that place, actually.
Oh, really? I'd love to hear it.
Chris,
that was not the fat lady singing. Yeah, if you'd like to hear it, it's just a short one, but it's a pretty good one. My Sean?
What's that?
I said I do have a story about St. Louis Cemetery number
yeah,
two.
That's fine. I'd love to hear it.
Okay. A friend of mine and I, we were teenagers in, you know, the late 70s again, and we were going to be Billy Bad Eggs, and we were going to run away from home. In all of this, we wound up walking from Battery, one part of New Orleans, to downtown to get to the bus station to go. We were going to hop a bus and visit family in another state. We were walking, and these two young girls did not need to be where we were. And as we're walking down, we're trying to figure out what to do. We look over, and against the wall of the cemetery is a very tall, slender black man that leaned up against, you know how you see the old cowboy kind of bending over lighting a cigarette, you know, that silhouette type thing. And we go past, he says, "You ladies don't need to be here." We said, "No, we're trying to get to the bus station." And he said, "Okay, stay right here." We waited till the bus got there. He put us on the bus. He paid our fares. When I turned around to tell him thank you, he was gone.
Hmm. Wow.
I will never, ever. I've seen probably four apparitions in 30 years of doing this, and I will never, ever forget that man. Angels come in all different shapes. And he was an angel that night, because that's not where we needed to be.
Yeah.
Yeah, now, isn't that supposed to be the most haunted cemetery in the country?
Well, I mean, everybody's got names, you know. It is or it isn't. I don't go by facts and figures and all of that kind of stuff, you know. Everybody wants to brag, this is more than this, and, you know. It's just getting into I can't use that word, just a spitting match. Let's put it that way. You know, my street's more haunted.
Yeah.
My, just New Orleans, everybody betters everybody up on, you know?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, how long have you guys, you are working with Jeremy, right?
Right. I don't live down there now. I just come down, and I'm fortunate enough to do cameo appearances with this group.
Oh, okay.
All right. I've been doing it for 30 years, you know.
All right.
He actually
lives
in Tennessee, guys.
Jeremy, you still there? He's the one that he's put Ghost Quest together. That's his baby. That is completely his baby. I'm just lucky enough to get to hang out.
Okay. So now, Chris, are you still there?
Yep. Yeah, I'm here.
Okay. Now, does your group primarily focus on scientific investigations, or does your group also kind of use a little bit of like psychics?
We focus primarily on scientific instruments. You know, if it gets really bad, if we run into that demonic case, or if a cleansing doesn't work, you know, or a message doesn't work, then, yeah, you know, I think I would bring in a psychic meeting if I absolutely had to. But we generally just rely on scientific methods.
Absolutely.
Now, Jeremy, do you use scientific methods as well?
I don't use them in every case that I do. I'm kind of like Chris. I try to go on do the scientific method, and if I can't get the answers that I'm satisfied with, then, yeah, I'll either contact Gail or another medium that I have at my disposal, and I'll get them to go through, and I don't tell them nothing about the case whatsoever other than, hey, come take a ride with me. And I try to you know, what they're telling me matches up with what I've been told or what I've experienced personally. So, yeah, I don't use them all the time. I'm kind of like Chris. I use them when I need them. You know, I feel my number one priority is I have to find answers for these people, and I'll go by whatever means necessary to provide them answers.
Absolutely. I'm right
whenever
with you on that.
About the client, whatever it takes. How big of a series is it? Fly it out.
Someone's breaking up. Hmm. Or is that another company?
Yeah. All right. So what you guys have anything coming up as far as like an investigation that you guys want to talk about?
Yeah, Chris, give him the
yeah, I remember.
Well,
yeah.
Well, Ken landed us the Southdown plantation we got up coming up on the 20th. He can tell you all about it.
Yeah, that'd be
really
great.
It's a beautiful place.
Yeah, I mean, I passed the place many, many times on 311 down in Houma, and I've always seen this huge pink and green plantation home. Yeah, it just sticks out like a sore thumb. It's actually a beautiful structure. I ended up finding the name of the place, and I sent them an email, hey, you know, I explained to them in depth who I was and what our intentions were, and the woman reciprocated with, and okay, so, I mean, me and Chris met up with him and an investigator, Sean. And we was able to tour the place, have a little 30-minute, 45-minute investigation while we was there, and we locked it in.
Now, the history there is that there were thousands and thousands of slaves that were abused there. We don't know too much about the history of the family that lived there, but we do know about the claims. The claims was a little girl died of yellow fever there. I think her name was Anna. And
yeah,
they're actually
Anna.
Actually the Houma Indians who were forced off the lands very brutally are still claimed to haunt that area. Actually, we didn't know this until we went on the tour, and the director told us Deep South Paranormal investigated that place. And she spoke so highly of them, just how great they were. And they caught an EVP there of an Indian. It sounded like an Indian saying Houma. They didn't find any traces of the little girl. So that's what I'm really hoping for when we get there, is to find some evidence there. And they did catch a shadow, too, outside, jetting across the yard there. So we're hoping to get some good activity there. And the place is so huge, so we're going to have to bring Jeremy and them in. We're going to have to set up two DVR systems, and we're just going to investigate the place as best we can. We're going to cover as much ground as we can, you know, do the headquarters outside, and hopefully it'll be a really fun but hot night.
Chris,
we'll
date on that?
Stuff.
If somebody has a radio on, there's a lot of feedback that's coming through.
What?
Is that better?
Yeah.
Chris, and, when is that investigation?
The Southdown investigation?
Yes.
Okay. Did everybody hear what I said with the claims?
Yes.
Yeah. What'd you ask, Gail?
Yeah. I was just wondering the date, trying to see if I could sneak home.
The date. It's going to be on July 20th that we're going to be investigating it.
Okay. I'm going to... Just in case anybody wanted to follow you, keep tabs on where you are.
Yeah, well, we're very active on our Facebook page, very active, and if we get time to on investigation, we like to make updated posts, and so if you follow us on Facebook and you know we're on investigation, we're not posting, that means we're getting activity.
absolutely.
We actually have the Lafitte guest house coming up too.
That's
we can't announce that date to the public because it's going to be very private. Over the air, but the claims there are to a little girl who passed away there, and the mother passed away there shortly after. But the rumor is, now I don't know if this is a fact or not, that the very first charity hospital was there, and then it burned down, and that's what they put there afterwards. I believe a medium or somebody came in and said when they walked in they could see a row of hospital beds.
Yeah, cots.
So we're hopefully able to
pick up some activity there, you know, but everything we, all of our evidence, you know, we rely on the scientific method.
Absolutely,
you know?
As do I. I just happen to have this other little thing going on, you know.
Yeah, a little thing, huh?
If you cannot absolutely find any, you go through everything imaginable. If you can't find an answer, then we look to the paranormal.
Yeah, and it's so hard. It's so hard these days, because I was just on YouTube earlier today looking at ghost videos and stuff like that, and people put out so much fake stuff that...
Trash.
They're kind of desensitized to even the real thing, you know, because they don't know the difference, and it's like, huh, that could be fake. So everybody,
yeah,
even paranormal investigators, have a, like a rule they follow. You know, if
oh,
I wasn't
yeah
there, then it's not credible in my eyes, you know.
Exactly.
And that's a shame, you know.
Exactly.
People who lie and who try and cheat and just... get credit for
well,
everything.
It hurts the ones that are trying to help other people. You know?
Exactly.
I know. I've been doing this since I was a teenager. I grew up in a haunted house. And it's something that, especially in South Louisiana, you it's ingrained in you. You want to laugh about it a little bit, you know, because people make jokes. But it's there. The energy is there. All you need to do is just pick up on it. It's
and,
there for
you know,
anybody to pick up on.
Society's output of hauntings in the paranormal world is
right
kind of looked down upon. It makes people afraid to pick up that phone and call us or to tell their husband or their family members or even children to tell their parents that they're going through this stuff. So people just try and learn to deal with it when, and if it's something demonic or evil or just bad, it's just... really hard for them to live a peaceful life
that's,
in that way, and all because they're afraid of being judged, you know?
Exactly.
That's one
so
of the things
true
I hope we can bring to the field is that people, you know, it is something that you can talk about and not be frowned upon, you know? And
exactly.
That's
growing up with it.
And
I'm going to take the other side there, growing up with something like this, and like Jeremy has it in his heart. You're scared to say anything that you feel or you've seen for, you know, fear of being ostracized also. So it's a real field that needs to be understood. I mean, come on, we just found, you know, electricity 200, I'm just throwing a number out there, you know, 200 years ago. What else do we have to find that's out there for us?
Exactly, you know, and that's even in the scientific world with instruments that we use to gather evidence. Look where
exactly
we're at. I mean, we just invented the wheel, like, what, 6 years ago in our
exactly
industry. So imagine 10, 15 years from now with the instruments
I can't wait
that we have, what we can accomplish.
You know, in the late 70s, it was, if I remember right, it was Dr. Larry Montz who now owns the old, not a crematorium, it was the old funeral home down there. He helped try to break New Orleans into a scientific type of investigation. And that's where I came in as a teenager. And you've got to have both lines. You've got to have the facts, and you've got to have the backup. And if you don't have the backup,
yeah,
the feel and the facts, keep your mouth shut.
Now, have you found a place that you've investigated, any one of you, that there were tons of stories about and yet you experienced and found nothing at all?
Sure. Well, I can answer that one real quick. Actually, the Myrtle's Plantation. I have investigated the Myrtle Plantation three different occasions. We had access throughout the whole building. And I have never encountered anything that I deem credible. You know, do I think the place is haunted? Yeah, I think there's a little bit to it, but I think a lot of their stuff is hype. I do not believe that everybody that goes there has an encounter. People go there wanting to encounter something, so any little thing that happens, they assume is paranormal. But
yeah,
as for me, through investigation, I have not caught anything there.
Okay.
Oh, now that's what I want to ask you guys. The question is, during the Civil War in New Orleans, have you guys ever had investigated anything that had to do with the Civil War in New Orleans?
only what Chalmette Battlefield, English Turn, you know. But when we go wars, we're looking at wars before the Civil War. You know, our history goes so much deeper than that. I'm sure the civil people that are interested in it, I'm sure that's where they would gravitate to. I'm just speaking for myself. I would go into the plantation houses. That's just what I like. But Jeremy likes a different. I'm sure Chris has his favorite also.
What are your favorites?
Me?
Yeah.
Or Jeremy? I love the old plantation houses. I love cemeteries. I love restful places.
Yeah, I
mean, what about Kim? He's getting quiet over there. What's one of his favorite things to do? Hello, Kim, do you copy?
Hey, I'm here.
I don't even know how I got on here.
We were never out in the middle of a swamp deep state happen.
What about the Rougarou?
The Rougarou. Which one?
Let's talk
That's
about
horrible.
The Rougarou. Yeah. Tell us one about where you're from.
Actually, I've never really heard of the Rougarou up until about 2 years ago.
I just recently heard about it myself. So
See, when I grew up, it was the boogeyman. We could get your devils to pull your toes if you're being bad. You know what I'm saying?
And
my family is like true, authentic Cajun. My grandparents barely could speak English, you know, growing
right.
up, it was all Cajun French. And when my cousin mentioned the Ruger, I'm like, well, what is that? He had to explain it to me, so I started researching it and found out that it was supposedly half man with a wolf head.
I'm not familiar with it. You know, I'm like you. It just popped up on a scene, it seems like, a few years ago.
I'm not
from down there. I'm from the North Shore, so you got different critters over there.
You see, the more you look into it, the more you realize that depends on how you spell it, is depend on which Rougarou you're talking about. They got
right.
the man body with the wolf head. You have the demonic werewolfish type. You have the half alligator, half Sasquatch, and also you have the Sasquatch.
Right.
So, yeah, like I said, depend on the spell, depend on which one you're talking about.
You know, we used to hear about the Lulu, so I'm guessing maybe that was our version of the Rougarou.
I thought Lulu was Creole for a ghost.
Probably so.
Ruga is actually is Lua in French, which is I believe it's like
Lucaru.
Yeah, it's Lucaru. Actually, that's the proper name, but it was changed over to Rougarou,
right?
With the R, not the L. I don't
when
know
they,
who
when they
it, but it has
went
changed.
To the English version versus the Cajun French version
the
that
French
first came
version.
In. Right,
exactly.
Right.
I was just watching a program last night on TV about the Rougarou here in Louisiana. I've had somewhat a personal experience. Basically told me surrounded by woods, of course. I mean, Patterson area is a big island in the middle of the swamp, like Market City, and there are other places. Well, me and my cousin decided to go hunting in the woods behind our house. Well, the woods are very dense, but there's this one section that was, say, about 30, 40 feet wide by, say, 100 feet long. And it was pretty much a clearing, you know, it's leaf-covered ground, dirt, twigs, you know, so on. Well, something just caught my attention when I looked down and noticed there was a big, like, hole-type thing in the ground. And the more we looked at it, the more you could see it was a footprint. And the footprint was ginormous. It really was. I would say it was roughly about 12 to 14 inches long. It resembled my hand without a thumb. We had pictures of it. It looked like something just flew in, took about 30 steps, and just flew off. The traction started and ended. And the weird part is we had all these pictures, I mean, amazing pictures of these tracks. And cannot find one of them. I never went in the woods again. If you look at the footprint of the Honey Island swamp creature, it's the same one that I've seen.
Yeah. Now my cousin saw.
Now is this creature like a werewolf? Oh, okay.
Yeah, they are also werewolf. It's the person that's cursed for 101 days, and the only way they could break the curse is if somebody closely related to them was to cut them and bleed.
I saw that on TV last night. I've just never heard anything. I mean, I'm not, you know, every area got their different folklore, but it's just something new to me. But
yes,
we
and
have
the Rougarou
does
vary in so many ways.
Yeah, yeah, because we were always taught it was an old witch lady, you know. But I'm in a different part of the swamp that you are, so that makes all the difference in the world.
Yeah.
But my cousin actually saw a footprint of the Honey Island Swamp Monster in Slidell as a teenager. He got lost. He smelled it. He heard it. He saw the footprint the next day, but he never did see the animal.
Yep. That's exactly what happened with us.
I have a guy that used to work with me that swears up and down. He was hunting in Holly and down there in the swamp, and he actually ran across a nesting site for he said it had a real strong odor. Till we always told him it was crazy.
Yeah.
So, but it might be something to it.
I'm getting cold chills, Jeremy. You're telling the truth. The hair on my arms is standing up.
It smells like a mixture of garbage, sewage, and rotten swamp
blood.
Like
a wet dog.
It is horrible smelling.
Oh, my. That's something you
are you enjoying it? We've just taken over your radio show. I hope you don't mind.
Yeah, pretty much.
That was
great. Yeah. Well, what was that? I was going to ask
when he asked.
Yeah, now that we're getting into, like, creatures and things like that, in New Orleans, when did the whole vampire legend start?
God, it's been, the stories have been going on for 300 years. Allegedly, the nuns brought the caskets over there in Ursuline Academy, and what was in the coffins were the vampires that they took care of, is where one set of folklore comes where the vampires came from in New Orleans. And then, of course, you have your resurgence when Miss Anne wrote the famous book. You know, that brought out the, I hate to use the word wannabes, you know, but it was in fashion again. That's what I'm trying to say. You know,
and,
the whole goth movement.
I've actually investigated the vampire house in the French Quarter about a year ago.
Which one's
that? Yeah, the vampire house. And the French Quarter. It's actually on the ghost tour. It's on the ghost tour down there. I can't think of what street it's on. I know it's by Nicolas Cage's house down there somewhere.
Yeah, I think it's on I'm trying to find it. St. Anne Street or something.
So it's just called the Vampire House?
Yes, it's called the Vampire House. And the reason it's called the Vampire House because St. Germain in the early 1700s lived in France.
Oh, I think I know the house now.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, he lived in France, and he was a very wealthy man, very good-looking, very charming. No one really knew where his wealth come from, and he would throw these elaborate parties down there, and women would end up missing. Well, over time, the authorities kind of catched on to him down there. Well, he disappeared from France, and he showed up in New Orleans 50 years later. And they claimed he hadn't aged a day. Well, again, he got very good with the, the politicians in New Orleans, and he would throw these elaborate parties and stuff, and women would. Well, one night, one of the women, she threw herself off the balcony of the upstairs down there, and she landed on the street below, and they brought her to Charity Hospital, and she ended up dying there, but before the police were able to speak with her, and she told them that St. Germain was trying to bite her neck. Well, back in those days, the law was a lot different than it is nowadays, so they just simply knocked on his door. It was late, told him to come to the police station the next morning. You know, they had a few questions to ask him. Well,
he disappeared that night. Nobody's ever heard from him since. Well, the police, when he failed to show up at the police station, they decided to go to the house. Well, when they went in the house, there's a wine cellar in there, and the cellar still exists today. And he had hundreds of bottles of wine, and it was mixed with blood. I actually was in the wine cellar doing a K2 session, and, I mean, the K2 meter was just going crazy the whole time I was in there. And what was, the closer I would get to one certain side of the wine cellar, the K2 activity would really, really increase. Well, come to find out, there was a picture against the wall in there that was turned backwards. The back was facing toward me. And when I put the K2 meter right on it, I mean, it was just pegging out red. And I turned it around, and it was actually a picture of the house before it was remodeled.
Oh.
Hmm.
What? Wow. Did the dungeon have something to do with that story?
The dungeon?
Yeah.
No, there wasn't no dungeon in the house.
The dungeon?
The guy that fled from France, his brother was trying to kill him, correct?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, the dungeon's tied
and
into that story.
The dungeon's an old hangout.
Right.
Yeah, it's a barum now, but actually, if you look at the history, it was a torture dungeon.
Right.
People were shackled to the walls when the police invaded the place.
Wasn't it in cahoots with the LaLaurie Mansion? Isn't that underneath it, where they found all the bodies and all the twisted people and stuff?
I found that in the attic.
Yeah, those were in the attic.
It was all tied together somehow.
Now, there was that one.
I can tell you all this. The house, though, the house itself is one of the most beautiful houses you'll ever see.
Oh, yeah.
It's just, it is literally like stepping into an inside of an old castle. Like, I mean, there's actually a library room in there with shelves going all the way across the wall. Now, the people that actually have the house now, they don't live there. They only stay at the house during Mardi Gras. I mean, generally, they're very wealthy. And, you know, she's experienced a couple of things while she was there, and that's why they don't stay there. They only actually stay there about two or three nights a year, which is during Mardi Gras. But, I mean, that house there just has so much history to it, and I was just so amazed at just the history alone. And then you actually get to walk into this house where all this history took place, and, you know, it just makes you wonder in your mind, well, you know, what did the house look like back then? What did St. Germain look like? He actually stood at this roof where I'm at right now at one time. It's just a fascinating thing to me.
Oh, very.
That's amazing.
Yeah. You know, like, you think that, like...
you become a part of that living history.
Yeah. Yes, that's basically what I was asking.
So there's the LaLaurie house, too? That's also a very haunted place.
I took 4 steps into the LaLaurie Mansion and had to turn around and go out. I got so violently ill.
Wow, that just makes me want to go that much more.
That's what I'm saying.
Oh, dear.
I knew you would, brother.
let me tell y'all. Me and Chris went on an investigation on the weekend before last weekend.
Last weekend.
Oh yeah, we went to Hessman, Louisiana, and like I say, I've been scratched before, I've been bitten, but I actually got punched in the face or slapped one or the other, and it was one of the most horrifying but yet most awful experience I've had.
Yeah, that was probably, I don't know, I mean, it's up there. It's probably either one or two of the most exhilarating investigations I've ever been on. We were doing 2 different houses, and they were related. They were sisters, and we were doing one house that had the most claims. Well, the other house had actually caught EVP of a little girl, and, you know, she played it for us and everything, and so we planned on doing half the night one house, the rest of the night the other house. Well,
during the middle of the investigation, you know, they got a phone call stating that the kids were there and activity was picking up. So we head over there and we walk in and you can just feel the atmosphere. It was extremely heavy. Hair already standing up. And so we turned out all the lights. And once the owners left, okay, and it was just Jeremy and I there, that's when things started to pick up. And we have the video of it. We have it all captured. You got a couple of EVPs from there. And all of a sudden, the AC was turned off. It was 90 degrees in there. I was sweating. Jeremy was sweating. We were getting a lot of activity through the spirit box. I got tugged on my shirt. Jeremy had his audio device on, which enhances his hearing. He could hear a little girl crying or whining. You can hear it. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden, everything got really cold. And then I felt the extreme cold spot. I mean, this cold spot had to be like 50 degrees. No exaggeration. And it was down low by our knees. And Jeremy reached down to feel it. And then shortly after, he says, "I feel like I got punched in the face." And I said, "What?" He said, "I feel like something just hit me in the face." So I turned the spirit box on. I put the flashlight on him. And I kid you not, it was little bruise. And I've seen it get, watched it grow. Like the swelling puff up, and I watched the bruising take place. I sat there and watched it, and I was like, "Oh my god!" We had multiple EVPs out of that place. There's one EVP I'd like you to play, Chris. You're actually going to hear the spirit box, but then you also hear a little girl scream.
Oh, yeah.
It's just being him in there, right when Jeremy got his leg grabbed and jumped. And you're going to know the difference that this isn't from the spirit box. It's crazy. Yeah, Chris, you got that? Did you want to play it?
Yeah. Which EVP was
it? It should say stop at EVP.
Okay. Yeah, I'm going to play it. Hold on. Let me bring it up. You know, what location were you at when you found this EVP?
We were in the living room holding a spare box session. It was before, it was right, I had just got my shirt tugged on, and it was before Jeremy got punched in the face. And he had just got his leg grabbed, and I jumped up. In the video, you hear me curse and jump, and you can actually hear it in the video if you wear headphones. But here, you're not going to need any headphones.
Give me one moment.
No, it was really, little girl's presence was definitely present in that house. We were all huddled up in the bathroom. Disembodied voice of her. It was just a very insane night. We also caught an orb on video, which I haven't posted yet online, but I will. Actually seen by our camera guy. Floated right out the room, right towards the camera, right around him. And that was actually Ryan. Ryan should be on the air right now with us.
Yeah, I'm here.
Yeah. So, Brian, tell us about that orb a little bit, or what you saw.
Oh, just one of the members from Ghost Quest, Farrah, was flashing camera, taking picture after picture, and Chris was in the room by himself. I think he was using the spirit box. Anyway, it doesn't matter what he was doing, but she kept
you
flashing.
Never know what I'm doing.
Yeah. She just kept flashing, and like when I'm behind the camera, I just totally don't pay any attention to anything around me except looking at that screen and what I can hear through the headphones. And all of a sudden, she flashed, and I just seen this thing come out the room. And I mean, I had no clue at the time what it was because she was flashing at the same time, but I knew I caught something. And then the next day, Chris told me that it was an orb that came flying out the room. So, I mean, it's fairly intense.
the lady that was taking the pictures, that's my co-founder. Her name is Tammy Portier. Love you, honey.
Yeah, you better give her a shout-out.
Yeah, I know. It's not just my fault.
Hey, Miss Tammy.
I'll probably be getting a phone call here soon, too.
All right. I have the EVP. I'm gonna play it right now.
You all right? What? Let me grab my leg.
See, that's
crazy. Okay, now, what was supposed to be heard in that one?
Wait, say that again, Chris?
What was supposed to be heard in that one?
She said, stop it. I put it through my software, and I analyzed it, and she screamed, stop it. So it's something grabbed Jeremy's leg. He reacted to it. I jump up, you know. I say, are you okay? And then you hear somebody say, stop it. And you hear Jeremy say, something just grabbed my leg. So what we think is there was a male figure there who was kind of running the house. And then she was there too. You know, the owner had captured a clear EVP. She was in the bathroom. And she says, I just heard you. Can you talk again? And you hear this little girl say, wash my toes. Just like that. So we have an EVP. I don't know if I sent it to you, but we were all in the bathroom, huddled up. And we say, we're going to run you some bath water so you can come take a bath. We're going to wash your toes. And you hear a little girl go, like she's kidding, like laughing, like playing. She says, yeah.
She goes, yeah. Just like
yeah.
A very playful voice.
Exactly like that.
And we're all sitting there because we could hear this. Now, we could actually hear this whenever he replays the digital recorder. And we're all standing in this room, and it was just plain as day. And we knew from listening to the EVP that the lady of the house had caught. It was the exact same voice, and we were all just sitting there like, whoa. You know, we were just ecstatic, and we were thrilled to actually catch that.
Yeah, even through the spirit box, you could hear her. When she communicated through the spirit box, you could hear the same exact voice coming through the spirit box. So, and I was noticing this as we were doing our investigation. I'm like, that's the same voice. That's the same voice.
How successful has the spirit box been in your guys' investigation?
Oh man, they've been great. I love the spirit box. I mean, look, we have gotten Chris had actually done a house in Denham Springs, and he caught this phenomenal EVP of this thing. He asked him what his name was, and he says Damien, and it was a real. Dark.
And then he growls. And then he growls.
Yeah,
I actually have that.
Growls.
Chris, you should have that EVP. It says demonic. That's
yeah,
actually,
yeah,
I know y'all are talking about spiritual depression after an investigation.
Yeah.
I actually went through that the first time we investigated that place. And some of the investigators didn't want to go back. And that's when I caught that EVP or that spirit box voice. The first time we were there and contacted Jeremy, we were like, we got to go back because activity's still going on. And, you know, I don't know. I just I had got pretty depressed after that. Went through some things during that week. But after I went back and faced my fear, so to speak, nothing was going to stop me from going back and helping these people. You know, this thing wasn't going to win. And after I realized what we did, you know, everything started coming together for me again. So if you want to play that demonic EVP, you can.
Yeah, I'm going to play it. Now,
I know you talked about
how
the Spirit Box worked for us. It's worked for us tremendously. It's helped us so much in our investigations. I love it. We actually had, we're trying different Spirit Boxes now, especially the AMD tuned. Which immediately our equipment manager Ryan fell in love with, and he's got some stories about that, some crazy stories. Once we got it in, I don't think I could have taken it away from him.
Yeah.
He was like, yeah, I'm taking this home, okay? Just letting you know that, Chris. You can ask Ryan some questions about how he works with the detuned spirit box.
Okay. Now, what I was curious about is how did you feel after this suppression? Did you just feel depressed, or?
I mean, I think it's stages. I mean, really, it was kind of denial. I mean, I didn't realize what was going on. I had some anger issues. I usually don't have anger issues. I mean, everybody gets upset, but kind of just thoughts going through my head. I'll tell you, a general day for me is pretty much happy-go-lucky. Everything's fine. I'm a prankster. I'm a joker. You know, I like to have fun and laugh a lot. But for some reason, that Monday after that, I just wasn't, there was no smile on my face. I was very upset. I would get these kind of weird thoughts about, like, you know, fighting and stuff like that, and I would get these weird images in my head, and I'd refuse to tell anybody because I was scared to tell anybody. So, I mean, there's kind of anger issues, really, just kind of depressed, not wanting to talk to anybody, not wanting to do anything, and if you have such an active, fast-paced lifestyle as I do, to where I'm always doing something constantly, and you're going through anger issues and depression, you don't want to deal with anything, it sets you off even more. So I'm having, you know, Ken text me, I'm having Megan text me, you know, just like they do every single day about all the things that we have to take care of as a group, my job going on, you know, and constantly other things. There's just stuff I didn't want to deal with that just made me angrier. That's kind of just how I felt, you know. Towards once I realized what was going on, and I think after I was able to face it head on, I started to feel a lot better. And I haven't had any. It went away. So, and I hear it. Aaron Goodwin and Nick, also Ghost Adventures, talk about when they go into some very haunted demonic places, they go through those same things after their investigations. And it's kind of like I felt all the time that they talked about that. I knew exactly what they're going through after I felt that.
That's why kids don't need to be going out. This isn't a joy, fun, happy Friday night thing. This is serious.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I want to say one quick thing before you listen to the EVP to give y'all a little background on what you're listening to. When I was staging the house, the man of the house, not going to use any names or anything, but the man of the house throughout the whole investigation, he was pretty much in his own little world. He didn't want to have nothing to do with the investigation. He was laying on his couch playing with his phone. Well, I do the smudging in the house, and I start doing the dragon's blood, and I'm in the master bedroom, and he gets up off the couch, and he walks down the hallway, and he crosses his legs and he crosses his arms, and he leans up against the hall where he's looking straight at me. And I tell you, his eyes look to me like black, okay? And I asked him, I said, "Are you okay?" And he didn't respond to me. And then I asked him again, I said, "Hey, are you okay?" And he didn't respond again. So finally I used a little force, and I said, "Hey, are you okay?" And he just looked at me, never blinked, never moved his eyes off of me. He just shrugged his shoulders. Well, I knew right then and there something was about to happen. So I got somebody to read a warfare prayer. And so I told her, I said, "No matter what happens, do not stop reading this warfare prayer until you finish." Well, when we're reading the warfare prayer, he's on the couch. And he's on the couch. And you can just tell him that he's pacing back and forth. He's pacing back and forth. He's very uneasy. And I thought I was going to be physically attacked. And after I got done doing the dragon's blood, I mean, he kind of just looks at us like, "Why are y'all all just looking at me?" And I am happy to say that a month later, we keep in contact with the clients. And the last time Chris communicated with her, she said that she has not experienced any paranormal activity in the house since we left.
Now, I want to say something real quick. That I was in the master bedroom doing some readings. I don't know what I was doing. I was doing something. I was by myself. And Jeremy comes barging in there. And the look in his eyes is just, I don't know, astonishing. He tells me this story, and it's just the look in his eyes is very powerful. Now, for this guy that he just bumped into the week before, we did it. The same attitude. He didn't want anything to do with the investigation. He would talk to you a little bit. That was fine. But when Ken started to cleanse this house, they all came outside. okay? That was just, it was like, it almost looked, because I was outside while Ken was cleansing the house, and it looks like something had ran him out. And the guy had come, he comes outside, and he leans against the car. And he has his back to me, and I'm about 5 feet away. And I said his name several times, and he never responded, never moved. And I circled around him, okay, and then look, and I kind of got a deep voice and said, hey, man, you all right? Like, kind of like that. And he says, yeah, I just have anxiety problems. And he was completely in a trance like I had never seen before. And it was
He was sleeping.
And like, yeah, like he was sleepwalking. It was almost like it wasn't him. And I had just had a deep conversation with him a few hours prior. So I don't understand it, you know. And then what happened after that, then that's the following week, it was just amazing. You're going to hear this EVP, and you're going to hear what we're talking about. And there's another little story I want to tell you right after that.
Yeah.
About this.
Yeah, I'm going to play it right. I'm going to play it right now. Right now.
What's your name?
Wow.
Yeah.
I'm like, wow.
I remember going over that, and I remember going over the evidence and coming across this and just standing up, walked down my hallway, and I was like, did I really just hear? Came back to play it again, and I said, I got you. You know, I got you. And then I called Jeremy, and that was exactly what happened. Now, the second week we came back, we did a spirit box session, and we're inside the kids' room. And it is intense. This is on YouTube. And I have the K2 in one hand and the spirit box in the other, and we're getting direct responses like I've never seen before. And the K2 spiking. All of a sudden, my arm, my hairs on my right arm stand up, and it's static electricity. And I can feel it all the way from the tip of my fingers from the K2 meter as the K2 is lighting up, going into my teeth. And I'm feeling it. And after 15 minutes of doing this, Jeremy was like, I got to get out of here. And I felt the same way. When I get out, Jeremy comes up and asks me if I'm okay. And then one of our investigators walks over, and he says, look at your arm. And he grabs my arm. My arm is freezing. And this is June, all right, in southern Louisiana. And my arm is freezing. You can feel my left arm. It was hot. My right arm was freezing. So that was just crazy experiences we had while we were investigating.
I have something about that house as well. Well, when I went to go bless it, me and the lady of the house sat there for roughly 5 minutes with both of our lighters on my face trying to get it started. I could never get it started good. I had my oils, my protection oils with me as well, but I tried and tried and tried. And throughout the whole house, I felt like I was getting nothing done. I got as much accomplished as the guy got out of bed and had some type of attack or whatever. The weird dude that sat in the window, he totally left the room. And the weirdest thing of the whole, everything about the sage is never could get it lit, just a light smolder. I come home 2 weeks ago, I blessed my house. It took 3 days for my house to air out because the sage was so strong in my house. It lit up,
wow.
Like, no problem. That was just odd. I spoke to Jeremy about that. He's like, well, sometimes sage does that, you know? And I'm like, oh, okay. Well, when I went to bless my house, I never had a problem one with lighting it. In fact, I needed a fire extinguisher to put it out. I don't know if it's just coincidence or what.
From that growl I heard, I don't think it's coincidence.
I mean, you know, I'm high up in the Wicca religion now. I mean, I felt defenseless, like I was doing nothing. Nothing. I've never felt like that in my life.
Not
yeah,
like
well,
you were walking through mud and you weren't getting anywhere.
When Jeremy cleansed the house, when he used the dragon's blood, he said, Chris, let's try an experiment. Grab the K2. This is so cool. We're in the children's bedroom, and I'm getting K2 spikes. It's like, okay, I'm getting K2 spikes right here constantly. And he goes from each corner of the room, all right, and all of a sudden the K2 spikes, I'm following the K2 spikes out the room. And he does this with the whole house, and I'm scanning the whole place. It's a small trailer, all right? And I'm scanning the whole place, and I'm picking up K2 spikes. And I'm following this thing out the door. It was a trail. It was following Jeremy's trail, pushing it out the front door. And the last K2 spike I got was next to Tammy. And Tammy had told me, look, I feel heaviness. And there was K2 spikes right next to her. And by the time Jeremy was done, the last K2 spike I got was by the front door. And that's not coincidence. That's just, I couldn't believe it. I was amazed. I was like a little kid, you know, just excited, like, this is actually happening with my scientific equipment, all right? So.
You got to truly believe in what you're doing.
Definitely.
Yeah. Amy, did you have anything to add to that?
Believe what you're doing.
That's it. You got to do it. You got to do it for the right reasons, too.
Correct.
Now, this demonic case that you guys... Oh, sorry, Amy.
I said no, I didn't have anything to add. Yes.
Oh, okay. Okay, so I couldn't hear you guys echoing. So, did you guys, like, during this demonic case, now, was anybody, like, under spiritual oppression?
I believe so. There was a third member of the family. I don't even think he was a family. I think he was a friend of the family. I don't want to tell the whole story, okay, to protect the confidentiality of the clients. But the Sam was here. When they found out we were coming back, all of a sudden he had to leave for some reason. So he left the state. We came in and we investigated. We did the dragon's blood. We did everything we did that week. And when he came back, he stayed for one night, and then he moved out all of a sudden. And the husband, the man of the house, you know, what his experience with what Jeremy had with him, you know, I think everybody was spiritually oppressed there.
Really? Now, was this tied to the house or was this to the person?
What's that?
My personal opinion is I kind of think you had both going on. I think you had something that was holding on to the guy that I was talking about in the hallway. I don't want to use his name. But I also think that there's a cemetery like right across the street from the house. And I think you had a couple of spirits that come and go. But I also think that there was one specific spirit that pretty much controlled the other ones. And I think he was attached to one of the people in the house.
Through a K2 session.
Jeremy, are you talking about our investigation or the one you did with the guys from New Orleans?
No, the one I did with the guys from New Orleans.
Okay, I'm just stepping out. I was just making sure I had the story straight.
We did a K2 session, and we asked clearly, this actually on YouTube, we asked clearly if you wanted to harm the lady of the house, and the K2 was fine. You know, the entity that was there, whether it was demonic or just evil spirit, it didn't mean it's, you know, it wanted to hurt these people. It wanted to control these people. It wanted to walk the house. It wanted everything that a selfish, self-centered, you know, evil entity wanted, you know.
It wasn't as much as the lady of the house. It was as the two guys. Seemed to be somewhat normal, but the guys, they were weird. Especially the dude in the window. He creeped me out for real.
I know you talked about how Jeremy spoke about how Joy was in that state of trance, you know, sleep deprived and everything, and the same symptoms match this individual right here. So during the investigation, he did not get up. He would get up and answer the door for us like a couple of times because they would lock the door because it didn't work properly or something, but that was it.
His actions were very strange as well. He would sit there when you would try to ask him something. He would slowly turn and look at you, and he would hesitate, and then he would slowly answer you. And then once it was done, he was like slowly turning back to what he was doing, looking at the wall.
Yeah, it was like a TV was on in the house and nobody knew it.
Yeah,
when Chris like he was being manipulated.
Exactly.
When Chris first contacted me about that house, one of the first things he did was he let me listen to the EVP. And I knew right then and there after listening to the EVP, I knew this case was going to be a challenge. So, you know, I went in with we went in with the right attitudes, and you know, I think that so far we come out on top on this one. I mean, only time will truly tell, but you know, it's an amazing feeling to know that you are able to help somebody in this situation. It's just truly an amazing feeling.
Yeah, I believe that cleansings only last so long before it has to be redone again.
Well,
so once that cleansing wears down, yeah, it'll be back.
Well, cleansing is like this. This is my belief. You can cleanse a house, but if you're living a negative lifestyle and you don't change your lifestyle,
definitely.
That
definitely.
Is only going to last for so long, and that door will come
back. That's right.
Now, can you recommend actually like a self-cleansing that somebody can do, like just anybody could do, like as long as they put the faith in it? Is there like things you recommend they do?
There's several ways.
Sure.
One way is to fill your bath tub up with
water
and sprinkle sea salt in it, and you lay in the tub, and it's supposed to purify you of all negativity.
And you can simply sage your body. You know, one of the things that I personally wear for protection is I have a ring that I wear, and that's my protection. It's got the cross on it. I got it from a special place. That's my protection, and I feel that it worked for me because I specifically put that item as my protection, and I put all my belief into this item that it's going to protect me, and I really believe that it does protect me because of the faith that I put into it.
Yeah. See, I'm the same way as Jeremy, except I don't have nothing that I use to protect myself except my thoughts. That's all I use.
Yeah.
And I believe in my thoughts, and that's all I need to in order for it to work. No different than Jeremy's item. He truly believes that that's going to work. It's going to work for him.
Right. Well, you see, one of my biggest fears is whenever I go in a paranormal investigation, it's not fear for me. It's fear for my team. Tammy, we were investigating the old SSA building in Covington. It was an old nun convent. Over 60 nuns they died in this place, and we spent spent 3 hours literally trying to locate this place. I mean, it's kind of back in the woods. We finally get there. We are literally 7 minutes, and Tammy starts freaking out, and she is like, "Jeremy, we are getting the hell out of here right now." And I'm like, "What do you mean? We just got here. We ain't got but 7 minutes to fuck." Well, she was literally crying. She was shaking up. She claims she's seen a red ghost. It was a full, like a full body apparition, but it was solid red. And I have never heard of this, okay? And I'm thinking to myself, well, I've never heard of that. But I actually looked it up, and it exists. It does exist. So, I mean, she was literally shooken up. She said, "That's it. I'm not going ghost hunting no more. I'm done. This is it. I'm done with it." You know,
well, what is the red ghost?
Red ghost is rage. It represents rage, anger, things of that nature. It's a very negative thing. And like she says, it was wearing a cape and everything. So, but luckily, she decided to face her fears. She actually decided to face her fears, and we went back to the SSA building again, specifically for her to face her fears. So, you know, with that happening to her, I worry about my team a lot because, you know, they're not quite as experienced as I am. They're getting there. But that's my worries is not, you know, my well-being because I feel that I know how to handle it. I fear their well-being because they're still in that learning process.
Yes.
I think, did I send you a couple more EVPs?
Sounds about right.
No, I think that was it.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, what I want to talk about a little bit is like the spirit box, you know, how we've been using it and everything like that. I wanted to bring Ryan on because I wanted Ryan to talk about what he's been doing with the A and D-Tune spirit box. Ryan, you still there, huh?
Yeah, I'm still here.
All right. And he's got some pretty interesting things about the spirit box.
Yeah, I mean, we first got it
And, you know, I was really skeptical when I first started using Spirit Box and hearing it. And I didn't really know what to think of it, but we ordered it. And I started playing around with it in my driveway. And it works. Especially the AC tune, because everything comes through so clear. And the odds of it picking up a radio station that answers your question almost every time is just astronomically impossible. I mean, I was talking to people who claimed that you asked them, how did you die? And one said Rita, like Hurricane Rita. So I'm guessing it's because no one in my neighborhood's ever, you know, done anything like this. So I get, like, a lot of responses, and it gets to the point where there's so many people trying to come through that you can't have, you know, you can't talk to one person because there's so many people trying to talk at once.
Yeah. Amy, did you have a question?
Now, can I ask a question real quick, or?
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
No, y'all go ahead.
Nope. All right.
What's
the question?
Hello? Yeah. Yeah. You had a question, Gail?
Okay. No, I was just curious. Yes. Whichever one of the guys saw that had the experience with the fellow that seemed oppressed, where when you said the fellow looked up at you, like his head was turned down and he kind of looked up at you.
Yeah, that was Ken. That's when you were talking to that individual on the stage.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Ken?
Yes?
Yeah. What I want to know is when he... I've had a personal experience like that.
Uh-huh. I'm not following what you're asking. I mean...
Well, what
I'm
trying
confused.
To get to... Sure. Could you see the difference in the fellow's face when he came up? Did it look like there were any muscular or skeletal changes in his face?
I'm not sure which one you're talking about.
He's talking about
you said there was a person in the house that seemed oppressed.
The guy
that kept staring out the window.
Oh, strange dude. He was
little window dude. Sorry.
I'm sorry. I was thinking that you was talking about like a spirit or something. Okay. Well, this dude. I mean, you look him in his face, and there was like no life there. I mean, he was lifeless, and I mean, honestly, you know, I'm like a big guy, and I'm not scared of ghosts and stuff like that. You know, I'm wondering, I'm gonna go run after him, but this dude scared
you
me.
Know?
I've never came across something like this before in my life.
Right.
And
that
this was just
question.
Way too real. And when we pulled up, we automatically, me, my wife, Lisa, and another investigation, when we pulled up at this place, there was just automatic bad feeling. I'm ready to go home. She was ready to go home. The other investigator, and I believe most of us was like that. And then when we got into the place and we met this dude, the window dude, I mean, it was even worse. You know, I just wanted him to leave or me leave. So we stayed outside a lot in the graveyard.
Yeah, and that's sad. Cemetery's the safest place to be. But the reason I'm asking is I did have I've seen one person that I honestly believe was genuinely possessed. And what you described was what I saw. That's where I was trying to wrap it all up and ask you about.
Yeah, actually, within about an hour or so of being there, one of our investigators come up to me and he's like, Ken, I got to talk to you about something. I'm like, sure, man. So he pulled me aside, you know, privacy, and he's like, well, I was looking at him, and he turned and looked at me, and he's like, I swear to you, his eyes were black.
Yeah.
I'm like, really?
Yeah.
He's like,
I've seen
yeah,
that before.
They were black.
And
then,
well,
that,
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 that's what
and then
I
we had a second.
The other guy in the hallway.
Yeah. And then we had a second investigator pull me aside and in the privacy again. He's like, Ken, there's something wrong with these people. He's like, I think they're possessed. And I truly believed him. And I'm like, you know, I believe you too. I've never felt like I felt that night in my life. I've
right.
never been scared like that before. And I don't scare easy at all.
No, me either. I'm 6'2" and could play for the Saints, but you talk about get up and run.
You were up there with us, huh?
Hey, we got to put the Saints in there somewhere, guys.
That's right.
I mean, you got big people like you and me. I'm 6'3". Ryan is probably as big as I am. You know, he's broader
yeah.
than me. And, you know, I mean, here you got some big people that are scared something's not right of little shorter people, you know.
Well, it depends on what's inside those little short people, you know.
Exactly. But, I mean, you can swing all you want, but you ain't gonna hit something that ain't there.
You got it. But that was my question, because I have genuinely
yeah.
seen that, and there were four of us in the room, the girl that was possessed, myself, who at 18 had to figure out how to do an exorcism and didn't know what I was doing. One girl literally jumped up and ran out. The other girl soiled my bed and couldn't move.
Yeah. Well,
you know
the other
change
fear,
in that
fear,
girl's face was unbelievable.
The other fear, I think the biggest fear that I have was, okay, I've never experienced this before, and this is a human being, and there's the fear of bodily harm to me and my family and my friends,
sure.
you know? I mean,
absolutely.
What happens if this dude was just
blows
to get
up
and go berserk? How do you protect yourself? You're in his house.
Exactly.
There was a moment when Jeremy and I were in the master bedroom talking with the lady, and the husband walked in, and he reached in the top drawer and grabbed something. And he had that look on his face like he didn't want us there. And I could feel it. My heart drops. I know Jeremy's dead. And we
yeah,
really thought he was grabbing for a gun. We really did.
Yeah.
You know,
it's crazy stuff. But it's real,
now,
you know. It's
not,
real. That's
not,
what people need to understand.
No, I'm
this
not talking about the...
You know, this isn't a game. This isn't playtime. People want to go out there and play with ghosts. They don't know what they're doing, you know.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And
I was concerned,
you know, they end up
about
getting
the
hurt.
Husband.
The lives get destroyed. You know, it's just got to leave this up to the people that know what they're doing. It's
yeah,
scary.
You know,
really. Just because
have
you haven't gone through it doesn't mean you won't go through it, you know.
Right. And
there you go.
I have a saying with all these new paranormal groups that keep popping up everywhere. I call them fly-by-night paranormal groups. They're the same people that watch Ghost Adventures or something on TV.
Go
and
buy
all
some equipment.
Hey, I want to be a
And they know what they're doing.
Exactly.
This
is a thing. This is one of those kind of things to where you're playing with fire. Sooner or later, you're going to get burnt. People have to understand.
You're right.
What they see on TV,
they know just enough to get them in trouble.
Real. What they see on TV is not necessarily real. It just glorifies it. There is a dark side to this that a lot
yeah.
of people
yeah.
don't understand and are not prepared for.
Okay. Well,
they
can
handle it anyway.
Left, so I'm just gonna finish up the show. But don't log off. Just don't hang up, because it'll take it into archive, and then the rest will just whatever's said out after 30 seconds, it'll be recorded. So I just want to thank everybody for coming on, listening tonight, and join us next Friday at 10 p.m. Eastern Time, 9 p.m. Standard Central Time. And I appreciate you guys coming on, listening tonight.
Thanks for having us.
We enjoyed it.
Yeah, thank you for having
us.
Thanks for giving us a voice. We appreciate that.
You're welcome. Don't hang up though, because you're still on, and I wanted to finish the conversation. We'll be right. Yeah. Now, what were you guys talking about when now, how do you feel about some of the new groups that are coming on? Do you think what do you think that inspires that?
In my opinion is fame. A lot of these groups that come out now, they watch these guys on TV, and that's what they want to do. They want to try to get out, be all about themselves, and try to get something, you know, to get them on, get themselves on TV.
Look, 15 minutes of fame.
Right, the true ghost hunters like us, that is why we team up together, because we want to show Louisiana and the state, United States for that matter, that paranormal groups should be united as one. They should work together as one, because you never know when you need to call up on backup. And if you're all about your burning your bridges with these other teams, nobody's going to reach out and help you. I mean, we're actually fixing to start a charity tour across the state of Louisiana. My team, Paranormal Orleans, we put our differences aside. We're working as one to raise money for the Children's Hospital. You know, look, this is all about helping people, whether it's in the realm of the paranormal or not. You know, we're going to do a charity drive to raise money for the Children's Hospital, because that is helping people. That is what these groups should do. If they are not in it for the right reasons, they need to get out of it and find a new hobby.
Now, what is your feeling about groups who charge money?
They're not going to last long. Okay.
No, that's in my world, that's called self-gain, and that's not allowed.
That's
where I come from. You know.
Yeah, it's like what Jeremy said. We're in this to help people. And when I formed this group, when I was with two different groups, I was at a crossroads. Either give this stuff up or keep pursuing. Now, I went on a case, okay, and this is when I felt like I had my true calling, where I was able to help a little girl who had been diagnosed with paranoid schizophrenia and psychosis because she heard a little girl's voice. We were able to capture that little girl's voice.
Oh, poor little black-haired girl, dark-haired
girl. Get her off the medicine and her back to normal life. That's when I felt like I had my true calling. And that's why we stick to residentials. We'll never stop doing residentials, and we're here to help people. And we have to continue that. Now, these groups that come in here and they want to just go play around with some forts, play around some plantations, that's fine. Go ahead. Don't sit there and...
play within your own sandbox. Don't step outside.
Yeah, the worst thing is they
you
drink
afraid
on investigation.
Groups like this will make it worse? Like a haunting worse?
I'm sorry, Amy?
Would you be afraid, like these groups that you say don't know what they're doing?
Absolutely.
They'll make it worse. Yeah.
If they're messing with a residential house where demonic or evil spirits there, yes. They can stir up activity. They can... because the spirit will know that the owners want them gone, and the people that come in here don't know how to cleanse or don't know how to gather proper evidence will just stir stuff up. Yes, absolutely. Like I was saying, these groups that come in here that they want to play around, they want to go to plantations and historical sites or hotels, and they want to get drunk. It's a big party. It's a joke.
You're
a
ghosty. Yeah.
You know, people that own these places get upset, and they won't let any other paranormal groups in, and that ruins it for everybody.
That's exactly it.
If you're listening, you're in a paranormal group, be professional.
Right.
Behave yourself, all right, and stop ruining it for everybody else, you know.
Yeah.
You know,
we'll teach you.
You know, we will show you the right way if that's what you want to do. But you got to be in it for the right reasons.
Exactly. If you call me and you say, hey, I need help with this, I will gladly help you 100%.
Right.
You know?
That's what we're here for, is to help and teach.
If you're on a TV show, you're out of your mind. You might want to go try USG or something.
Yeah. It's a different world, you know? Once they pull the veil back, it's a different world.
Yeah. Maybe this is kind of selfish on my part, but if you're not in it to help people, what are you in it for, you know?
Yeah.
I know you call it a hobby. I know you like to go play around. You know, that's fine, but what are you really in it for? You know, it's not to help people. If you have the ability to help people, why aren't you doing it?
Yep, and that's going to cut all the circle, you know?
Yeah.
Somebody helped you, so it's time for you to help somebody else.
Exactly.
Unfortunately, in the paranormal, you know, investigator world, you deal with that quite a lot. You know, teams that's out there all about themselves. And, you know, some of them will go to great lengths, man, to discredit somebody else. And it's really
sad. Yeah, it's sad.
It happens every day.
You know, that any teams, you'll hear the teams out there that do that, they'll say, oh, it's a competition. Well,
yeah.
If you say that, then you're in the competition yourself. You know, it's not a competition.
Mm-hmm.
If you go investigate a fort, I don't care. You know, if I'm scheduled to investigate it a week after, you know, I'm going to go investigate it. All right. Hey, let's share evidence. You know, hey, I got this UP, you got that. Let's see if we have some answers here. I know of groups that will be like, well, they made a quote. They'll say, I'll never investigate any other place that another group's investigated. And I'm like, that's just the most ridiculous thing I ever heard in my life. You know?
Yeah, we always share other people's findings, their evidence,
sure.
Like pictures and stuff. We're always putting that on our Facebook.
Yeah, we put everything we can on Facebook. Or on
I mean,
Facebook.
Right.
Have
with
you
social
ever,
media out there now, we have a chance to have so many different opinions and views of our evidence.
Now, have you ever had someone who's investigated that place that you've investigated and say, oh, well, your evidence can't possibly be real because, you know, such and such, such and such. Has that ever happened to you?
Sure. But I want you to prove why you think it's that way. And if you do, then I'm wrong. Nobody's perfect. If I can learn from you, that's great.
Just because a place is active one night doesn't mean it could be active another night.
There was a place we were going to investigate, and then we announced it, and I got a message saying, good luck. All we had was high EMS while we were there. So,
yeah, and that's what I'm talking about.
I was kind of like, why even message me that, you know? Like,
yeah, that's the kind of mentality I was talking about. It's that kind of like, oh, because you didn't find anything. You know, kind of like, I didn't find anything, so you're not going to find anything. So, and it's like, what?
Right.
Like,
well, guys,
you know.
can I butt in for 1 second here? I'm going to tell you this. You can have all the scientific equipment you want, okay? If you don't have gut instincts, that instrument is useless, okay?
Thank you, Jeremy.
Definitely.
It comes from the inner soul. You have to be in tune with what's going on. And if you're not, if you don't go by gut instinct and you just rely on those instruments you got in front of you, it's useless, man. You've got to have inside of you.
Absolutely.
Instruments are no instruments.
I got to agree with him on that one, but I'm a little biased. Yeah, I go with my gut. You know, I have. Always have, always will.
I mean, look, when you investigate a place, you have to be focused. You have to be in tune. You have to know what's
absolutely
going on in your surroundings. Like I said before,
it's not a Friday night football game, right?
Exactly. If you're drunk, if you're drinking, which I know groups around here do and go on, and I despise it, you know, you're not really
in the altered state, right?
Yeah. Sorry. You know, if you do that, you're not in tune. This is serious stuff, like we said. You have to be in tune, focused, and ready to go. We have an investigator named Sean Hampton, and he's kind of like me. He's a prankster. He laughs. He jokes. Plays like I never know what he's gonna put on my Facebook page. Okay, I have a phobia. I have a phobia of little ghost, you know, spirits, little girl spirits. And he's always posting that stuff on my Facebook page.
Little black-eyed kid.
Yeah. I tell you what. When it's time to investigate, it's game face. There's no joking.
That's
there's
it.
No playing. It's time to roll. And he's truly professional when he does that. Yeah.
Well, everybody, I'm going to have to say goodnight.
Yes, we've enjoyed it.
Speaking with you.
Yeah.
And
I don't know how I got on here. All I did was dial a phone number, and the next thing I know, I'm on live. And I did not plan that, Jeremy. I promise you.
So goodnight.
Goodnight, guys.
Goodnight.
Good night.
Bye. Call me, Jeremy.
All right.
Yeah, I pretty much just wanted to end the show off and just you know, Gail, if you want to, is Gail still here?
I think she hung up.
She left. Okay. I just wanted to end the show and just, what tip would you give new investigators that want to come into the field?
Take it seriously. Have some passion.
Yeah.
You know?
Passion is the biggest thing.
Passion is. You know, if somebody wants to join our group, you know, Ken and I, the first question we ask, or the first thing we look at is passion. Because you can learn how to do everything through experience and be an experienced investigator. if you don't have that passion, you're not going to be anything. And we've had people who come on who hasn't had the passion, who don't last very long. You know, it takes hours to go through evidence. It takes dedication. It takes everything. It's expensive. We're not asking anybody for any money. You know, we do everything out of our own pocket. So if you don't have that passion, you don't have that drive, you're not going to last long.
Yeah, you got a lot of these people that want to come on with the glory of ghost hunting, but not the work of the evidence, and that's not right. You got to have both of them. You in it 100%. You're not in it 50%.
Yeah,
it ain't gonna work.
Right. I've been called out a few times saying that it takes too much of my life, and it might do. It might take up a lot of my life. You know what? But I'm helping people, and if you got a problem with that, then you don't need to be around me.
That's correct.
Well, hello, I just want to thank you guys for coming on tonight and hanging out with Amy and I and, you know, doing this interview. And I appreciate you guys, you know, taking the time to do it.
All right, can I throw one quick thing out real fast? Make sure y'all check out the book Out of the Darkness. It's going to be released within the next 2 weeks. And I will be appearing on an episode of an upcoming show on the Discovery Channel called Ghost Attack. It will be out in October.
Sounds cool. All right, thank you guys again. And all right, thanks guys, and I appreciate you guys taking the time again.
Well, it's our pleasure, Chris. Thanks for having us, man.
Thank you for joining us tonight with our amazing guests, and we will see you guys next Friday.